Back to Sportsnet Tonight with Sandra Prusina. Streaming online and through the Sportsnet app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Well, happy Thursday. Sandra Prusina with you from the Sportsnet 960 studio in downtown Calgary. A very rainy Thursday evening here. Cool, windy. It's been a minute, though, since we've had a Sportsnet Tonight. Thanks so much for tuning in, and pleased to welcome in Dustin Forbes, who will co-host with me. Dustin, how the heck are you?
Well, I'm enjoying the rainy day. How's that? We can enjoy rainy days, right?
Listen, why not? You mix it in a little bit, I don't mind, in between those sunny days in southern Alberta.
I would say it's better than a windy day.
Yes, touche.
We had a very windy day yesterday, so tough to see, of course, the red lot kind of go down because of that. So I don't know if they would they have the red lot going if it's raining? Is that a rain or shine and just a wind impacted type situation?
I would assume as long as there's no lightning and anything too dangerous, they would probably have it go with a light drizzle or some showers. But I don't think with if there were torrential downpour or anything, I don't think it would happen, just because there's a lot of equipment going on there, a lot of electrical, a lot of things that are high on that stage. And it did look from some of those pictures that I saw yesterday that the stage got damaged. So hopefully things will be a little bit better for tomorrow for game two, of course, of the Battle of Alberta. Now, if people don't know you, Dustin, why don't you just give us a little bit of a primer on who you are and what you do, just so I make sure that it's not just about me, it's about you.
Yeah, well, I do the play-by-play broadcast for the Lethbridge Hurricanes in the Western Hockey League, so I've been doing that for the last 8 seasons, and that keeps me pretty busy. I also host the KISS 107.7 Drive show in Lethbridge as well, so I'm kind of a radio sucker. I kind of try and do everything I possibly can.
I think that's for all of us with radio. Once you get a little bit of a taste, it's really tough to shove us out the door.
Yeah, and like you and me both, we both do multiple things. So when this opportunity came up, I was like, yeah, that sounds fun. I'll add that to the 15 other things I'm responsible for.
Well, listen, I'm excited to have you here. And you know what? Why don't we just get right into it? What a wild 24 hours for the Flames. And we'll get to how the team moves on after the craziness of Game 1 versus the Oilers in a moment. But first, I really want to bring up the Jack Adams. I don't want it to get brushed aside in all of the hoo-ha that we've seen over the 24-hour period here. And the finalists are out. We found out at about, 8:30 this morning. And I guess no surprise to see Daryl Sutter on the list. You just take a look at the accolades from this season. He led the team to the Pacific Division title, 6th best record in the league, biggest season-over-season improvement over any NHL team. Went from 19th in goals per game to 6th, improved to 16th goals against to 3rd. And, of course, he is looking to become the second coach to win the award, Bob Hartley, back in 2014-15. But his brother, Brian, has actually won it before, so he would not have the Sutter distinction. Brian won it back with St. Louis in 90-91. But I have to say, when you look at the list of 3 players, this is kind of a no-brainer, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, you kind of outlined it there from the start. You talk about the turnaround from this Calgary Flames team from a year ago when Daryl came in kind of near the end, and you saw a little bit of progression there. You knew that Daryl Sutter was going to put his stamp on the hockey team. And I think him working along with Brad Tree, living the general manager, really went out this offseason and put their stamp on the hockey club. You look at the roster changes, the ads in Zadorov and Gudbranson on the back end to add a little bit of grit and sandpaper. And, you know, Daryl Sutter kind of cut from the same cloth as Brian Burke, the truculence, mm-hmm. right? You like to have a little bit of jam back there. And I think the biggest surprise for me, Sandra, has been not the adding of the physicality and the defensive side of the game, because we know that's Daryl Sutter type hockey. We saw it in 2004 when the Flames went to the Stanley Cup final, and we saw it a little bit last year. We saw it at the start of this year. But the biggest surprise for me that I think Daryl needs some credit for is the reinvigoration, if you will, of the offensive side of the game. And you look at what Johnny Gaudreau did this year, 2nd in the league in points. That line with Elias Lindholm and Matthew Tkachuk, 40-goal guys, all of them, just incredible. And I think that was for me, last year when they announced that Darryl was going to be the guy to come in and take over the reins of the coaching duties, that was my biggest question, was how will a guy like Johnny Gaudreau, a guy like Elias Lindholm adjust to a Darryl Sutter type hockey team? And passing grade for sure with A pluses, and I think absolutely deserved in that Darryl Sutter, I think, is the front runner to win the Jack Adams, but certainly a nominee along with Andrew Brunette in Florida and Gerard Gallant, who did a great job with the Rangers this year.
Well, Darryl was asked about the finalist nod today, and this is what he had to say. It's pretty interesting.
Darryl, you're nominated for the Jack Adams today. Congratulations. Yep. I know you're in the grind of it right now. You're in the thick of it. But can you appreciate for a moment, I mean, you thought you had retired from coaching, and you make the decision to come back probably for a very specific opportunity. And you know, obviously things have happened here. Can you put that into words, what it means to you?
Yeah, well, the reason I came back is because I've said this lots, you know, watching the team lots and watching the others in Calgary lots. I thought that the Flames were falling behind in terms of what was going on in the division, going on in the league. And that was the biggest reason that I came back. You know, Pierre, you know the way it works. I've been fortunate to be in the places I've been and with the owners and the type of teams that you'd like to see have success. I could have, you know, it's, you get to a point where you can not pick and choose, but you don't have to go through a process to take that position, so it's good.
Darryl, I know you're going to tell us it's a regular season award, but what does it mean to be one of the three nominated for the Jack Adams?
Well, it's not the best coach, first off. Right? If the coaches voted on the best coach every year, you'd see quite a bit different list the last 15 years. So the way I look at it is that I don't need that on my resume. Some guys do. So I'd rather see young guys win it, quite honest, or guys that have maybe got a raw deal somewhere, like a guy like Gerard. Got a raw deal in Florida, got a raw deal in Vegas. Oh, if I had a vote, I know who I'd vote for. Actually, in saying that too, I'd take the Jennings over that anytime, right? Anytime. I mean, your team's playoff team.
So Darryl Sutter with a little bit of an aw shucks kind of moment, but he's quick to deflect the Jack Adams finalist nod. No surprise, because this is Darryl Sutter after all. A lot of Sutterisms, as I like to call them. But he also gives a nod to his other finalist in terms of Gerard Gallant. I heard that Gerard Gallant joked earlier today, and he basically said, yeah, he's just saying that because I've been fired a few times. But some really good company here, and I think for Darryl, you touched upon it, is the fact that he's been able to get these players to plateaus, and he can always squeeze all of the talent out of these players, and they seem like they would want to go through a wall for him. And I think back to Game 7, Johnny's winner, and when they're going through the handshake line, and the camera caught this really special moment between Darryl and Johnny, and you don't see Darryl smile too often in terms of a hockey setting, even in a handshake, but you could see he was like, good job, kid.
I don't think a lot of the Sutters smile, especially when it comes to hockey. I agree, and your head coach is such a critical, this sounds dumb to say, but it is. It's so critical. And as much as you're coaching each individual as a player, you have to worry about the team results. And I think Darryl does such a great job in balancing the aspect of team success combined with player success. And we heard it all through the regular season. Anytime a reporter would ask about the playoffs, the line was, well, we got to get there first. And so I think that from the outset of the start of the season was put into the players' heads of, we don't have anything until we get it.
Yeah.
So whether or not we're in a good position to be in the playoffs, we're not there until we've mathematically clinched, and then we can move forward. And I think that spawns down to the players. I mean, if you talk to any hockey player, you talk to any coach, any manager, the regular season is the regular season. You play the regular season to get to what we're seeing right now and what you're experiencing right now in getting to the postseason. And we often hear, you know, once you get in, anything can happen. And I think this Flames team, led by Daryl Sutter as the coach, has the right mentality to be able to do special things. And we've already seen that through 8 games.
Special things. I'm kind of calling it the Sutter effect because he came in last season. He didn't mince words. He basically said there probably isn't enough high-end talent and this team needs to play with pace and come into camp in good shape. And earlier today, Elias Lindholm and Jacob Markstrom were asked about Sutter's Jack Adams nod, and this is what they had to say.
Really good coach, and obviously the coaching staff as well has been really good, and you know, we're all excited for them and him to be named to that prize, so it's or award. So it's good to see that the organization is doing pretty well.
Jacob, can you pinpoint one or two things that Daryl's brought to this team that were maybe missing before his arrival?
I don't know, because obviously I came in here and I didn't have Wardo for very long, and then Daryl came in, but you know, from the time Daryl came in till, you know, obviously the summer was really huge, and something he pushed on that, you know, we need to prepare to play, you know, deep and prepare to play long seasons and go in the playoffs, and you know, the structure and the way he wanted, he could really, I think, put a stamp on it when you have you know, full training camp and you have the summer, and I thought you know, he's done a great job with that in the way we play.
You just think back to the way that last season ended and not making the playoffs, when you look at the loser points and with the Canadian division and then what Montreal did and went on that really long run. But the fact is that this team was not ready and they needed a full season of Daryl Sutter behind the bench to see what it could really be. And the team wasn't blown up over the summer. There was a lot of chatter about that going into the last offseason. Okay, are we going to get another kick at the can with this group and see what they can really do? I think Daryl's found it with them.
And I think he's pressed the right buttons at the right times, Sandra. And that, you know, to expand on the coaching front, you're kind of like a psychologist. You have to know when to press the button and what button to press for each individual. And I think he has such a grasp at that. I mean, he's been nominated for a Jack Adams before. He's a 2-time Stanley Cup champion. He played in the National Hockey League. He knows what it takes to win and the types of players you need to have to win. And Johnny Gaudreau, Matthew Tkachuk, Elias Lindholm, the list goes on and on. These are guys that could go to the next level. And under Daryl, they have gone to the next level. And it's been fun to watch.
Okay, so I've worked in a newsroom for, oh goodness, over a decade and a half. And the rule is to always advance a story, but it's tough to forget about the wild night that was Game 1 between the Flames and Oilers. And since everybody got their turn on 960 to discuss it, Dustin, well, why don't we just go over what we thought of last night's barn burner? And for me, I can't say I'm surprised that Jacob Markstrom struggled, in a sense that you go the distance with the Stars and you were used to playing a certain way during that first round series. That opponent, Daryl, let his goalie figure it out in the third period versus, let's say, yanking him. And I think that's what an experienced coaching move was for his number one. Let him figure it out, let him adjust. And then now you look ahead to Game 2. Yes, the opener was really exciting for the fans, but if you were a goalie coach, you're probably pulling out your hair and wanting to burn the tape. Listen, tell me what you thought of that game and what's going to happen tomorrow.
Well, I was surprised we didn't see Barbs out there after the post game. Jason LaBarbera, the goalie coach. I think it, for me, I think it was probably a case of the emotions leading up to it. I mean, you all the talk for 3 days was the Battle of Alberta and the excitement leading up to that. And I think back to the first round watching the Oilers, and they came out flat in Game 1 and lost to the Kings. And Mike Smith had said, I wonder if we got too invested in the emotion in the building. And I think that probably happened in Game 1. And I think that's the worst you're going to see the Flames play. Certainly the worst you're going to see Jacob Markstrom play.
Yeah.
And probably the worst you're going to see Mike Smith play. And if it were me, and I was Jay Woodcroft, I'd probably go back to Smith tomorrow to give him the start because he was so good in round one for the Oilers to get them past the LA Kings. And just a different style of game from Dallas, right? You lock it down, they kind of suffocated you. And I know I saw the stat, I think it was 130 minutes for the Flames to get two goals, and they had two goals in the first minute in game one. And just a different style, and I think that's the one run-and-gun type game we're going to see because Daryl Sutter, Jay Woodcroft, and both teams are going to want to get back to playoff hockey.
And for those wondering, Jay Woodcroft has confirmed Mike Smith will start game two tomorrow, and you mentioned it. You're not surprised because Mike Smith, regardless of what his reputation here is in Calgary, he has shown he can bounce back and put unfavorable situations behind him. If you look back to the first series versus the Kings and a bit of that egregious stick handling error that got everybody up in arms, but guess what? He got two shutouts later in that series. So Mike Smith can bounce back.
He's a veteran guy. He's done it all his career, and he was so crucial in Arizona's run to the conference final. I think it was 2012 when they ultimately lost to LA, if memory serves. So you're talking about a 40-year-old. Right. I mean, as a 40-year-old broadcaster, you have experience that you draw on and you look at just a 40-year-old human being. You draw on your life experience, and Mike Smith has that. And so he's had a lot of bad games in his career and in his life, and how you reset. And that's the biggest thing. You want to talk about 9-6 and all the goals and the goaltending. Was it good? No. Was it bad? Yes, I think we can say perfectly yes. Blunt. But when you look at it in a playoff series, it's one game. And whether you lose 9-6, 6-4, or 1-0, you're down 1-0 or you're up 1-0. You kind of you look at last game, you learn from what you did good, and you learn from what you did bad, and you go into game two tomorrow and hope that you play a more structured game. And I think both teams are going to want to do that.
And not to get lost in the fold, Connor McDavid, goodness, he took a licking Wednesday, but he popped up every single time, put up 4 points. So how does Daryl Sutter feel about 97?
He's a great player. He's the best player in the league. He was the best player on the ice last night. Like, not even close. So at the end of the series, if Connor McDavid gets 4 points a game, good luck. Have a good next series, Connor.
Okay, so the wild card to me here is Chris Tanev, because he was at practice today. He has missed back-to-back games. But and this is not taking anything away from Michael Stone or Oliver Shillington, but I just think with Chris Tanev there, potentially it'll help the situation in terms of keeping Connor McDavid at bay at least a little bit.
Well, I would agree, and I think Daryl said it there. If you said that Connor McDavid would have 4 points in game one, well, you probably don't think the Flames win game one, but that's what they were able to do, and he was fantastic. Over 25 minutes in time on ice, led all skaters in the game, led the Oilers in hits with 5, which it was one of the surprising stats to me, and with the goal and 3 assists. But I think with Tanev, if he comes back for game two, and I know he skated before game one, and he skated today as well, it not only gets your number one defensive defenseman back, but I think it slots everybody back into their normal slots, and that's so huge. You talk about the Zadorov and Gudbranson pair, and at the start of the year when they signed those two guys, there was a lot of people going, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
But putting them as a tough third pair, you slot them into where they should be. You're not expecting them to play higher in the lineup. And if you can get Tanev back, it kind of slots everybody back into position and certainly will help you when you're talking about going up against the best player in the world and Leon Draisaitl, who was no slouch last night either, with effectively one leg.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, something else I want to touch on in this first segment is the Tkachuk cam, because that's become a thing. Everyone embracing having the whole family in town, seeing the support for Matthew, especially from brother Brady, who seems to be kind of loving life as a member of the Sea of Red. And I was able to hear a bit of an ESPN conversation with him a little bit earlier today. I want to make sure we just play a little bit of a chunk of it so we can just get Brady's point of view.
Yeah, it's been good. It's been fun to see, you know how Matthew's been playing, but of course, we'd love to be in the playoffs right now with our team. And, of course, didn't happen this year, but, that's a huge goal for us moving forward. But yeah, it's been pretty cool seeing, you know, the atmosphere and of course seeing this, Battle of Alberta in person for the first time. So I don't think I'll be able to get to experience this again. So it's, of course, everybody always knows the hype, and talking to Matthew, you know, in years past, he's been talking big time about the Battle of Alberta. So I'm definitely excited to see what it's all about.
You're not only seeing it firsthand, you're seeing it as a fan. I got to imagine it's been a minute since you've been amongst the people chugging beers at a hockey game. What's it been like to just be in the sea of red for these games?
Yeah, no, that's what I was joking around with my parents, you know, coming to the game, you know, getting there for warm-ups. Of course, usually they're a couple hours early, you know, tape sticks, doing your own routines. I'm like, you know, we went to a bar before the game. Like, this is wild. This is definitely a different experience. So, but like I said, of course, we love to be preparing for a playoff game. But no, it's been pretty cool. It's been a lot of fun.
So give us a little scouting report here, man. You know, how far do you think the Flames can go? How do they match up with the Edmonton Oilers? Put on your pundit hat for a second and break down the Battle of Alberta for us.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm just, you know, seeing how prepared and how my brother is and see how excited he is. You know, of course, I'm just excited to watch and be along for the ride and just see him play well. You know, he played, came up big in game 7. So, of course, he's as excited as ever. So I'm just excited to, you know, watch him and support him, you know, every day. And it's been nice to be able to see him. Of course, didn't see him much this year. So it's been great to kind of catch up with him, you know, no off days, and so I'm just excited to watch him tonight.
Brady, you've been very gracious answering our "You're in the Stands with the Calgary Flames" fan questions. I promise we'll get to some Senators questions as well, but this is one of my favorite storylines, like you just supporting your brother, being amongst the Flames fans, wearing the Friendship Tour shirt. So I have a couple of rapid fire questions that me and some other hockey fans are curious about, okay? Question one: what were the Flames fans' reactions to seeing you in the stands?
Pretty excited. It's coming up, like the Zamboni, you know, coming up through there to our seats. You have to go, you know, 15 rows up. So, you know, people are starting to kind of get excited and just kind of pumped them up a little bit. So it's pretty funny and pretty cool. But, I mean, yeah, it's a pretty cool experience for everybody. Mm-hmm. I'm just happy to watch, but yeah, it's, I think people are, you know, kind of happy, and especially seeing some reactions there, I think they're loving it.
Second question: how long will you go on the Matthew Tkachuk Friendship Tour if the Flames make, say, the Stanley Cup Final, Game 7? How far are you taking this?
I don't know. I'm taking it one day at a time right now.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm going home Saturday though, so I guess we'll wait and see.
Okay. If the roles were reversed, let's say Brady Tkachuk and the Senators are in the playoffs and Matthew is not, do you think that this would be reciprocated, like Matthew would be on the Brady Friendship Tour?
We've actually been talking about that. So I think after, you know, we were calling it the shenanigans I've been pulling. So I don't think he'd match all the stuff, but I think he'd be as excited as ever too.
And I saw so much vitriol on social media that Brady is a traitor and doing things like that. But I'm speaking as an only child right now. If I had a brother or a sister in that position, playing in the Stanley Cup Finals, potentially going on a run, or if I was that player, I would be so happy to have that kind of support, regardless of what team I potentially play professionally for. It's just about family. And this is just such a good story, isn't it?
I totally agree with you, and I don't understand why so many people are upset about it. You're talking, what's the most important thing in our life? It's our family.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an opportunity. Would Brady prefer to be playing hockey right now? Yeah, absolutely, he would. But he's not, and thus, he's supporting his brother. I don't see the issue with it. He's having a good time. The whole family's having a good time. And who knew that Brady Tkachuk would be more popular than Keith? I think that's one of the craziest. Big Walt isn't getting any of the love. It's all Brady. But I don't see the issue with it. We know how close the Tkachuk brothers are, the Tkachuks as a whole. We've seen that since they came into the league.
Exactly.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, same here, same here. And no doubt if the roles were reversed, Matthew and the rest of the Tkachuks would be supporting in the nation's capital. Now, we'll get to our next segment really soon, but I do want to make sure we mention this because we had some breaking news in the world of hockey. Today, the Vancouver Giants making hockey history with their final pick in the 2022 WHL Prospects Draft. The Giants selected defender Chloe Primorano, and she is the first female skater ever selected in the Canadian Hockey League Prospects Draft. And I find this is a really good segue, which is going to take our show into the next segment. But this young lady, I watched some of her highlights and her clips. I haven't had the opportunity to watch her in person. Peter Labardius has, though. Surprise, surprise.
Of course, yeah, shocker.
And goodness, he gives her a glowing review. Our friends over at the Vancouver Giants did send over some audio because they spoke to Chloe late this afternoon.
I was driving home from school with my mom in the car, and I was just praying for it, and it just happened, and I was in shock, honestly. I would say I'm a two-way defenseman. I can go up in the rush and go, you know, in the offensive zone, but when it comes time to play shutdown, I can do that as well. I just got to keep working hard, you know, just getting drafted, like, you got to keep working hard. You can't stop working hard and just keep pushing through every day.
Give me a quick thought on this, Dustin, because you cover the WHL on a full-time basis, obviously with Lethbridge, but what are your thoughts on making such a historic pick?
Yeah, I think it's long overdue, frankly. I think there's so many talented girl and women hockey players and people in our world that this is long overdue, and congratulations to her. We were talking before we went on air, there's got to be a first,
mm-hmm.
and Chloe Primorano is the first, and she won't be the last. And if you look at her numbers with the Burnaby Winter Club, 19 points in 30 games, that's pretty good. And I know, speaking to scouts around the league and our scouts in Lethbridge during the draft today, they said, hey, she's a good hockey player.
Yep.
Whether she's a female or a male, she's a good hockey player. And at the end of the day, that's the most important thing. So I'm excited to see how she progresses from here, and it sounds like she has a good attitude of, you know, being drafted is one thing, now I have to put the real work into it.
Well, it's been a busy 24 hours for everybody in the WHL, and we have the honor of talking to Calgary Hitmen General Manager Jeff Chenault just after the break right here on Sportsnet tonight. Stick around.
Back to Sportsnet tonight with Sandra Prusina, streaming online and through the Sportsnet app. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
Well, just so much happening in the world of hockey. Of course, the Stanley Cup playoffs, and a wild one just ending, moments ago. The Lightning and Panthers seemed like they were headed to overtime, Dustin, but for some reason, the Panthers just forgot they had to play defense. And the Lightning scoring with, what was it, 3.7 seconds left here to take a 2-1 victory and a 2-0 lead. And now they head home.
The champs doing the champs steal. Yeah. A good example of you have to play to the buzzer, right?
Goodness.
3.8, I think, was it 3.7 or 3.8 seconds left? And a missed assignment turns into a 2-0 series.
Well, the President's Trophy's winners here in a bit of a hole, but you know what? We're going to just put a pin real quick in the NHL and turn our attention to the WHL because, goodness me, it has been a hectic 24 hours. The U.S. priority and prospect drafts now in the books, and pleased to be joined here on Sportsnet 960 tonight is the general manager of the Calgary Hitmen, Jeff Chenault. Jeff, how are you? Have you had a chance to catch your breath a little bit here?
Oh, yeah. It's a great time of the year, and it's always exciting. And, you know, when you're talking to the young men you select a woman today, obviously that everyone is excited. And it's kind of a nice cap for the teams that aren't playing in the playoffs, the final two rounds. It's kind of a nice end to the season and get you excited for the future.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about the historic selection later, but if you can you just take us through your war room? How many scouts, how many front office personnel do you have with you helping you make all these selections?
Well, for us, we have two full-time scouts. Our director of player personnel is Gary Davidson, longtime general manager in the Western Hockey League, and he is based actually in Salmon Arm, and our other head scout, Gary Mikuluk, longtime, has worked in the league for over 30 years, was based in Winnipeg, and myself and Mike Moore here. That was it. That was our war room. And, you know, we had scouts meetings with the group last week, you know, once we'd finalized the lists and went through and let every region kind of give them their thoughts on where the players were ranked and get their opinions, and lots of good discussions and valid points for the players. So, yeah, that's sort of how the Calgary Hitmen did it. I don't know how the Lethbridge Hurricanes, Forbes, he might be able to tell you more than I can for that. But each team is different. But the bottom line is you're still selecting players. And you try to select the best players that are fit for your organization.
Listen, that was going to be my next question, because what is your approach to both of these drafts? What is the mentality? Do you go best player available, or are the Hitmen, just given the way that the season may have ended, are you doing it from a positional standpoint?
Well, we always say we want the best player available, but, you know, and that was, you know, our plan coming in. But if you would have asked me, you know, best player available, I mean, we knew who the best player was when the lottery results came out and we were drafting four. You knew you weren't going to get the top forward, and he went to Medicine Hat today, and rightfully so. And there was lots of good players today, and I think that every team's going to be happy with their selections over time. And, you know, from our end, I mean, today, you know, we were looking to add a defense. We've drafted a forward the last couple of years with our top pick, and they've been very happy with them. But the one area of our team that we'd like to improve is some puck movement, and you know, kind of that defenseman that can get the puck up the ice and contribute and sort of be like a fourth forward. And that's one area we did not do very well this year. We did not bring a lot of offense from the back end, so that was kind of probably our number one priority. If you look at our, you know, our first few picks, we had two defensemen and three of our first five.
And if I can just jump back to yesterday for the U.S. priority draft, you also took a pair of forwards. Just wondering if you can tell us a little bit about the both of them and why you think they are the right fit for the Hitmen.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the problem this year is we didn't get down to the States as much as we previous years, and I'm saying prior to COVID. And so we didn't get down as much our organization as we'd wanted to. We do have some scouts based in Arizona and in Minnesota, so we really relied on the two gentleman there. One's a coach in the Phoenix organization, or the Coyotes organization, I should say. The other one's a scout just outside of in Faribault, Minnesota. So they see a lot of hockey, so we kind of relied on their expertise. You can watch a lot of these young players on Instat and watch their games, but there's no substitute for, you know, watching them live.
Well, a busy 24 hours here for General Manager Jeff Chenault of the Calgary Hitmen. He's joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Why don't I send it over to Dustin? Maybe, I don't know, Dustin, is this a conflict of interest here?
Yeah,
I don't know if you're going to give any secrets away from the Lethbridge Hurricanes.
Yeah, might be. Jeff, I guess my first question for you is, how did you see this draft as a whole? Because some of the scouts that I had talked to said, you know what, the top 5, 6, 7 players are really good, and after that there's a bit of a drop-off from there. How did you see it from a Hitman perspective?
I think it might have been a little deeper than that, you know, Forbesy. I think that, you know, I thought anywhere from 8 to 12, depending what your needs were. I think that, you know, and again, I caution everybody, you know, everyone leaves the draft table today feeling really good and, you know, best draft ever, so to speak. But to truly judge a draft class, you have to wait 3 years. And you need 3 to 5 players of every draft class to play if you're going to have success. And I say play and contribute, in whether it be a goaltender, whether it be a defenseman, whether it be a forward, whatever. But that's what you're going to need of every draft class. So I think, you know, in this draft, you know, I think there's some real good forwards, some, you know, maybe not as much depth on the defense other than, say, the first 5 guys. And again, every team has a different list. You know, you're going to look at things a little differently. But, you know, I'd say a little deeper than 7. I thought between anywhere from 8 to 12. And, you know, I watched most of this age group. I watched more of the 2007s than I did with the 2006s. And I saw the evolution and the development of the players from the start of the season to the end. So I saw lots of improvement. And I think that's always what you're looking for in any player. You know, you want to kind of have that incline going up throughout the year. So I think that, you know, as we go through it, I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of teams very happy with their selections when it all pans out.
You talk about evolution and improvement, and I feel like over the last couple of years, that maybe has been one of the hardest things for a scout, given the climate of the world that we've lived in and sports and things like that. Maybe just talk to that in that you guys had two drafts in the last 5 months with the December draft and then today. So how did you go about scouting, and what was the challenge of effectively trying to look at two age groups in 1 year when normally you're only focused on one age group?
That's a great question, and something we've talked about throughout the process. It wasn't easy for the scouts, especially at the start of the year with the 2006s, you know, the December draft, you're watching them play at three levels of hockey, you know, the U16, the U17, and U18. So it was tough to get a good picture on those 06s, and again, back it up like everyone else didn't play hockey or very little hockey the year before. So it was really tough to get a good gauge. I did like the fact, and I'm a big proponent of the draft being a year older. I think it's, just more development, more maturity. You know, I just think those players are closer to being ready to play in our league. But, you know, that's just one team's opinion. But I do think with the 06s, you know, I think that's going to be a positive. But to finish the last part of your question, I mean, the 07s, I mean, you're watching them sort of at the same time. But, you know, the draft, I think, was December 9th, and we were doing the U15s the next day. So it was really tough for the guys to gauge, you know, throughout. And I use myself as an example. I watched so much of the 07s this year, but didn't watch any of the 06s other than the WHL Cup in October. So, you know, I was the other way. At least I had watched a lot of the 07s, you know, progress throughout the year. It was very difficult, and it was tough on our staff. And I'm sure if you know, poll the other 21 teams in the league, they'd feel the same way. It wasn't easy, but again, had to make the most of it. So we're in a pandemic that you and I have talked about before, and you adapt and you adjust and you pivot on the go.
Do you think that could free up an opportunity to have more diamonds in the rough as the development kind of catches up as these players progress and get older?
I agree. I think the development at almost all levels of hockey, I mean, I don't know if we'll see the positives or negatives out of this for a number of years. I really do. I mean, it's, you know, you look at, you know, a lot of these kids. I mean, a lot of teams were young in the Western Hockey League this year. A lot of teams were young, and for reasons, you know, because, you know, the year before, some of their older players, because we were in a bubble situation for most of us, you only brought in so many players. So if you weren't coming in on the play in the bubble last year, you know, you really weren't playing hockey. And then you might look at other options. So I look at development as it's a good question, and I'm curious to see how it plays out for all of us as we move forward.
One of the guys that stood out to me during the draft when you guys were selecting was Cale Dock. Now, the name will be familiar to people, but from my understanding, not related to the Dock brothers, Kirby, who plays with Chicago, and Colton, who plays with the Kelowna Rockets. But Cale Dock, you guys take in the fifth round. His numbers with the Fort Saskatchewan Rangers this year, staggering, 92 points this season. Is that maybe one of those late pick, middle round picks that you guys are excited about?
Well, I hope you're right. I mean, that's what you're hoping for. I mean, you know, we were a team this year that had trouble scoring goals. I think we were 18th in the Western Hockey League in goals per game. And one of the reasons we didn't make the playoffs was our lack of goal scoring. And not that a 15 or 16-year-old coming in is going to, you know, immediately light the lamp, so to speak. But you look at the pedigree, you look at the, you know, the past history of numbers. If you put up numbers, you know, at every level of hockey, eventually, you know, maybe don't put up as big at the Western Hockey League, but you have scored. And we're hoping that he and much of our other players can give us more offense, whether it be the defenseman we selected today, bringing it from the back end, or the forwards to, you know, give us some, you know, combined again with our 2006 draft class. We're excited about the potential, as I always use that word, the potential of all the players we selected in the two drafts.
Jeff, the last one for me, just the climate we live in, the draft has gone virtual the last couple of years. From a general manager's perspective and maybe from a scouting staff perspective, do you like that better than the in-person draft? I know as a media member covering the draft, you get the excitement from our end going, oh, there's Jeff Chenoweth walking over to talk to Bruce Hamilton or something like that. How do you see it from a management perspective? Do you like it better virtually in being in your war rooms, or do you miss the hustle and bustle of the draft floor?
It's funny you say that. I was talking to a GM the other day and before the draft, and he said he really misses the hustle and bustle. And now after doing three of them, the 05s, the 06s, and 07s, you know, I think I understand it. I like it a little bit more. I think the biggest thing, the draft that we do, we try it with Western Hockey League, does a great job with it, but we don't have any players there. It's not like the NHL draft or the OHL priority draft or the Quebec League draft. So we don't have those players there. So, you know, other than the, you know, pretending that we're NHL GMs and walking back and forth, I mean, you know, it's not like, you know, you're bringing players down to the table, giving them a jersey or anything like that. So I see both ends of it. I'm not really answering the question, but I can tell you I was a big proponent of the virtual all along, like leading into the 05 draft, and I didn't want it to come about the way it did because of the pandemic. But I kind of, maybe kind of a hybrid or something. I just, the problem is that, you know, you're bringing people in. It's very costly to bring them in, you know, for the weekend. And it, usually it's 4 days after the Alberta Cup. So do you keep your scouts here, do all your meetings? You know, they're taking time off of work. I mean, there's so many things other than, you know, just the actual draft that go into it. So it'd be interesting to do a straw poll with the general managers and the governors of the Western Hockey, get their thoughts on it after we've done it now for 3 years.
Jeff, Vancouver making history, taking Chloe Primorano, the first female to be selected in a WHL Bantam draft. From your perspective, could this be a trend?
I think so, and I can tell you what, I watched this young lady play quite a bit this year. She's awesome. Like, I mean, yeah. Awesome. She is an outstanding hockey player. She's got great IQ. She sees the ice well. Not afraid. She takes some hits just like any other player. She plays defense. She plays key minutes for the Burnaby team. I enjoyed watching her in every tournament that I watched this year, and so happy, and I hope there is more as we go along.
Well, two more before we let you go. What does your summer look like? Can you take any time off, or is it just go, go, go?
Well, you know what? It's like the rest of us. I mean, we got 68 games, and that was our number one goal this year. And we're playing playoffs. We're down to four teams, and I think that's the biggest thing, the biggest positive. I think for the teams that aren't in the playoffs, you know, there's always work to do. For us, we're going to have our first ever spring development camp. We've never held one in Calgary. We're going to have it the first weekend of June. We're going to bring in our 06s and our 07s and some of our 05s. And guys, back to Forbesy's question about development and that, you know, we just like to, as an example, the 06s have never been to a training camp because They were drafted in December. So the 07s now, we're going to try to do that. I know there's a few teams in the league that have done it, to still do it. We've never done one before, so that's a big thing for us. Hopefully have, you know, between 25 and 35 kids on our 50 player protected list. It's more than 50 right now, come to that. And so we're looking forward to that. We've got the import draft. My least favorite day in the as a general manager is the end of July 1st. That's always a tough draft because you're relying on agents and other, you know, NHL teams and information. And now with the world situation, there's no Russian or Belarusian players allowed. So you're eliminating two other countries there. So it's a big unknown heading into the year to that draft. But that's a very important day on the calendar. And then we, you know, it's July, and then August we get ready for start training camp. So it's a normal summer, maybe a little bit shorter, but I'm just happy to play 68 games this year, not only for the fans, but also for our players and organization.
Hey, have you been able to take in any of the Stanley Cup playoff action?
I've watched it. I watch it from home. It's easy at home. You know, you get upset, you get fired up, you can walk around your house, and I'm cheering for the Flames, obviously, and I think this is this Battle of Alberta, I mean, I think is great for the province of Alberta and two cities. You know, it's been 31 years in the making. I remember the last series in 1991, and Forbes, you can relate to this. We played I was working with the Lethbridge Hurricanes at that time, and we were playing the Medicine Hat Tigers in the Eastern Conference Final. And we played every second night, but the Flames didn't play. It worked out great. We had sold out barns in every game. Chris Osgood was the goalie for the Tigers. Jamie McLennan was the goalie for Lethbridge. I mean, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And so you remember that Battle of Alberta, and it's I just saw what it did for the southern part of the province, and then the Calgary Edmonton for the rest of really the whole province. It was exciting, and I think this is an exciting time for everybody, and it's getting everybody ramped up, which I think is awesome.
You talk like I was there for that 1991 playoff series. Jeff, I was a month old. Come on.
Wormsey, I'm just talking about the Hurricanes and the history of me, you know? Like, remember, I worked there, too. There's not many places I haven't worked, and I enjoyed my 2 years in Lethbridge. And, you know, it was a great time. And, I mean, it's hard to believe it's 31 years ago. And, you know, I just think that you look at the Battle of Alberta and you see 15 goals last night and you're thinking that's the most goals they've ever scored in a playoff game between these two teams. I don't think we'll see 15 goals tomorrow night, but you know what? The fans sure got their money's worth last night, and I'm sure when the series shifts to Edmonton on Sunday and Tuesday, it'll just be just as electric again, which is great, not only for the NHL, but for the province of Alberta.
You're right about that. Jeff, you are awesome. I know it's been a hectic stretch for you. Thank you so much for spending some time with us tonight. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate being on, and thank you so much. And if you're ever on the B list of, you know, guests, just give me a call.
Oh, no, come on. Thank you, Jeff. Have a great night.
You as well. Thank you so much.
That was Jeff Chanel, general manager of the Calgary Hitmen. They have been busy.